and spent his career in the industrial laundry business till 1972 when we sold the business to his family. And he subsequently started his own business of a fail-safe liquid oxygen business called Stewart Oxygen Services. And he's been successful at that for quite a few years now and enjoys it and continues to enjoy his music. And I like him. He's a nice fellow.
I should say so.
I'm delighted that he's taking an interest as the secretary of the Squirrel Hill Coalition, which I had the privilege of being a treasurer for some 20 years ago, for quite a few years. And he has some very strong ideas of the importance of taking interest in community survival. And he is quite alert to the fact that the Squirrel Hill section will survive only if it's properly maintained, and he put his shoulder to the wheel.
That's right. Do you have any family relationship with him?
Oh yes, we are still partners in a few pieces of real estate. Now going into 1992, it may be the last year that this business relationship will exist, because we're down to liquidating our last few assets. And we communicate on a regular basis because we formed a William and Sidney Stark Jr. Foundation that continues to support significant community activities, WQED and the United Way, and a few other things that we both are interested in and want to continue to see grow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our family foundation. Now it's the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll go on forever, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard you talk too much about politics in the sense of Democrat, Republican,
oh,
City Hall.
Let me tell you, Doc, let's talk about that, because I don't know if you know it or not, but I've had a fabulous long history of involvement in Democratic politics. At a certain stage, they were doing a five-part series in one of the local papers, starting with an explanation of Governor Lawrence and Mayor Barr, and I got referred to as Joe Barr's bag man, because along with a lot of other people, he was out there hustling money for the Democratic Party and active in trying to carry through on the election of people.
That means you're talking about City when you say Joe Barr.
Yes, I'm talking about City. I also had the pleasure of being very close to Congressman Moorhead, and I became the SBA regional director 1966 to 1971, and have attended three
Small Business Association.
Attended three White House conferences on small business. And had a wonderful experience. Knew Bill Moorhead well, helped get him elected. I was in Mr. Eisenstein's home the day a group of us were introduced to Moorhead and advised that we were going to raise the money to get him elected. Our congressman had been Herman Eberharder, who became the chairman of the most important committee in the House of Representatives, the Ways and Means Committee. And fortunately, Bill Moorhead was named to that committee and stayed with it until he died. As a matter of fact, our present Congressman, Bill Coyne, is also on the Ways and Means Committee. And as you know, that is a committee that spends all the government's money.
Now, how come we don't do better than?
We have always done very well. You would be surprised at the number of things that we've been able to get for Western Pennsylvania Maybe not as well since California attained such clout, but significantly, I would like to go around the county and show you the number of federal programs that we have, even as we mature as a city, not the least of which is this software institute at Carnegie Mellon that has to mean 2,000 jobs for Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Not the least of which was a United States Army installation at the county airport, which incidentally, even as late as 1991, was able to come out of its budget with funds to build a piece of the Southern Expressway. I had the pleasure of being on the Allegheny County Airport Development Committee in 1990 and 91, and my subcommittee was the Committee on Transportation. And it was a thrilling experience to be able to help plan the road system that is going to serve that airport for the next 20 or 30 years. The Southern Expressway, which would be the main entrance to the airport, was already a fait accompli. But we were instrumental in starting the program that will create the busway from downtown, that will eventually create the road between Robinson Town Center and a new bridge across the Ohio River to bring traffic into Pittsburgh over the north side. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we also had the privilege of setting out with some tremendous technical leadership from the Southwestern Pennsylvania Regional Development people and PennDOT, a road that you will not see start probably until 2000, that will cost some $20 million, that will go from the airport, bypass Mount Lebanon, go across through Homestead, Duquesne, and McKeesport, and end up tying into the Pennsylvania Turnpike out in Monroeville.
I've been hearing about that for 20 years.
Yes, and now it's in the stage now where it's starting to be given a priority and a planning budget. It was an exciting time to be able to be part of that planning process.
What years ago?
1991. Mm-hmm. 1990 and 91. We just finished our report to the county commissioners in 1991, and there have already been funds appropriated by the Congress for the execution of this program. We just barely touched on the concept of the Mon Valley Expressway. That didn't really come into play, except that it will probably be one of the barriers over which this new road system will have to go.
How does a committee like this form?
The county commissioners selected us.
Selected?
Yes. And the county commissioners selected us. The chairman was the... it was an extremely effective political organization because it involved... The county commissioners were smart enough to involve the three-man commissions for Moon Township, Findlay Township, Robinson Township, and the other communities surrounding the airport that were in on the planning from the beginning so that there was no internecine warfare. South Fayette will become a tremendous bedroom community. Northern Washington County will profit tremendously from a few roads that we were able to authorize. I don't mean to say that we created these things. I can only tell you that the professionals that were assigned to us were so well prepared. It was just a thrill to see. Yes, they hired one or two consulting firms to come in with technical detail, but PennDOT's people and the people who run the public transit system here in Allegheny County were just so superb in their grasp of the problems and their skill in handling the various commissions that had a political axe to grind. It was just an unbelievable, and a great credit goes to a fellow by the name of Stephen George, who was the county commissioner's professional, an architect that was assigned to guide this process. There were four other committees. There was a committee on land use, there was a committee on economic development, and there was a committee on political subdivision. So each one of those committees met separately. We didn't convene more than once. But we got to see the plans for this new airport. You will be startled by what Paso Gonzalez has created. You will take your car to the entrance to the airport and be immediately transported to the plane without walking. There are going to be people movers and so many other great advantages, and the parking will be right there, that you're just going to be thrilled at what this new airport's going to be.
What surprises me, this project cost is a lot less than almost any around the country that I have heard.
That's right. One of the reasons...
How does it...
One of the reasons is very simple, that you had Tom Forrester buying the land. We acquired the land about more than 20 years ago. And that is historically where most of the costs come from. Secondly, I shouldn't say most of the costs. I should say a major portion of the cost. We had no land costs. Secondly, Forrester had figured this change in the airport and its relocation more than 20 years ago, and we do not have to build another runway. They so well planned that there are five runways available, and all we had to do was move the location of the building in order to get the road system improved. I don't think people realize the foresight of some of these so-called politicians. Forrester, just an incredibly imaginative guy. But what they do that is so exciting from my standpoint is they permit some of the bright young people to come forth with ideas and let them execute them. You know, there's a dear friend of mine, Bobby Nelkin, that's just one of three of Forrester's assistants that has a certain area where he's entitled to come up with new ideas. And each commissioner seems to have a bright person or two that they rely on who create some of these ideas. Mm-hmm. And I had a meeting just last week with the director of the Allegheny County Parks System, and I was trying to persuade him to permit us to develop Drum Corps to get 300 kids off the street in the summer.
You told us about that.
I told you about that. But what you had to realize was, when we came to this meeting, he had his five assistants there. That one was in charge of North Park, one was in charge of South Park, one was in charge of long-range planning, and these five people, with this man who incidentally, I don't think ever went to college, comes from Morningside, was the coach of the Morningside Bulldogs, which was a teenage football team for 25 years. He comes to this meeting and so able to grasp what we were trying to say, and having his key people there, that the meeting was one of the most productive meetings I've ever seen.
What was his name?
Okay. The machine would not have heard you until then.
Mr. Natoli brought his people to this meeting, and they were quickly able to grasp what we were doing. I asked him if I could now go to Joseph Sabina Mystic, the executive assistant to Mayor Maslow, and ask him to join us in this project. And immediately he said, by all means. He said, I know Joe's in Kansas City because he's getting some special training now.
Is this Joe Natoli?
Joe being Joseph Sabina Mystic. And so I saw Mystic 2 days later and told him what Natoli said, and he said, by all means, he says, I don't have money for you, because you can see in the papers what kind of budget problems we have, but he says every one of these budgets has some money that we can do some things for you in kind.
Mm-hmm.
We might be able to repair your van, or we might be able to give you the benefit of the federal food program in the summer camp settings that we have in Shenley Park. There will be things that we can do, and we absolutely will be happy to do that. This has been my total experience. I was most important, I would say, from 1946 to 1972, I had the pleasure of being on the Governor's Conference on Employment of the Handicapped. And I would make speeches all over the area and do other things, including, of course, finding jobs for older people that I told you about, because weren't they handicapped by virtue of age? And when I started my speeches, I would take my glasses out of my pocket and take the hearing aid out of my ear and and say, okay, now let's all acknowledge that I'm handicapped because I'm not supposedly normal by the standards of the society, having to use hearing aids and eyeglasses. Now let's go from there. Well, to make a long story short, we had a long history of extremely important commitment to the employment of the handicapped. My family has $25,000 in the original Vocational Rehabilitation Center down on Forbes Avenue. You may recall that that started out as a program of the United Jewish Federation back in the early 40s. And once the Federation had launched this concept of vocational rehabilitation, taking retarded people and making them into taxpayers, and had gone along for maybe 10 or 11 years, we invited the United Way to come in and take it over, and it's one of the most successful programs in the country. The Vocational Rehabilitation Services is now part of a national movement, and every city has it, but when Federation started this, it didn't exist. And here's one of the places where you have to give the social worker credit for having created this concept. Then, of course, down at VRC, it was my pleasure to get people jobs that came out of there, over the years help them raise money, over the years do other things. And once the Christian community took over, it was less necessary for me to devote my effort to that, and I went on to do other things. I try to help cancer research. I became the national vice president of the City of Hope and make speeches all over the country on that.
Why did you take that on?
Because what happened in 1913?
The City of Hope, that's in California.
That's right.
How do you come
Let's go over to the City of Hope, because it's still under this major question that you ask about politics and social commitment. I think one of the happiest aspects of my life has been the opportunity to develop a whole philosophy on social responsibility of American business. I was thrilled to see the president of Westinghouse over the years, one right after another, take a stand. And what makes Pittsburgh such a great city is the willingness of our industrial leaders, with the Allegheny Conference as a spearhead, to take a social responsibility in creating a climate where other elements in the community could manifest themselves. If you'll notice in rereading the minutes of all of our conversations here, of all the things that I've been able to do, I was president of a small business that was really a service business to these big corporations and had all of these opportunities to do social good because of the climate that the big business gave us. I started out in the United Way. Did I tell you that I had the responsibility in the old community chest days that took me to be the chairman of the community chest for downtown between Penn Avenue, between Liberty Avenue and the river, and from 21st Street to the Point. This is long before urban renewal. And if you get down there and see some of the old buildings, they've long since gone, before the creation of the Gateway Center, and got all the way up to the point where there was only one job between me and being the president of the United Way, the community chest. And I said to them, you've got to get rid of me. First of all, you can't afford it you to have this job. It's never been done in the history of the United States. And secondly, let's get somebody in here that can go forward and take the top job. And so they replaced me with the president of H.J. Hines, Mr. Armour. but it was exciting because in those days, well, what would happen would be that the 12 or 13...
You asked out because...
Asked to be out, yes.
They didn't push you out.
Oh, my God, no. They were thrilled to have me, and I stayed on in health and welfare for maybe 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you about the strike force on youth with Dick Thornburg, mm-hmm. and I had a committee. So was it. And again, it all ties into the original question you asked mm-hmm. About the social welfare elements and the politics of the whole community. It was an exciting time as far as I was concerned. I have hundreds of pages of material that I'd love to share with you on examples of social responsibility of business and the speeches that I made. Coppers had a full-time man, assistant to the president. Allegheny Ludlam had a full-time man, assistant to the president. These were close friends of mine.
Yeah.
Who would carry out all their full job was the management of business's responsibility to the community. They would show up at the community chest. They would show up at the symphony. They would show up in all of the important fundraisers. What happened was the way the United Way would set its goal would be there would be an early morning breakfast for 32. Presidents of the 32 corporations, and Aaron Levinson, the president of Levinson Steel, the one Jew, okay? And the 33 of them would decide what the community chest goal was going to be. After each one of them committed themselves, U.S. Steel said, I'll give $1 million, and Pittsburgh Plate Glass said, I will give $1 million, and Heinz said, we'll give $900,000, and they went right down the list until they got Aaron Levinson, and at that point they walked out of that meeting with maybe $9 or $10 million, and they said, okay, now the campaign's going to be for $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out on the street and we raised the rest. And it got to be 23, 25, and so forth. Now it's up to, we took in Washington, we took in Beaver County, and a lot of other things, so the drive is now up to a $38 million base.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the way those things were done in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to give credit to Davy Lawrence and to General Mellon for having started this concept of merging the resources of the Democratic Party with the economic power of the Allegheny Conference. General Mellon was one incredibly imaginative man, and he understood that this was the best thing for Pittsburgh. So now I had the Governor's Conference on Employment and Handicap, and
Mellon was
extremely important. And that was the old days. Then we made that was the time when we made the Civic Arena. And the Civic Arena was owned by the county and the city. And you people are seeing its manifestations today. But once the arena was established as an ongoing thing, Edgar Kaufman stepped forward and said, gentlemen, I'm giving you $1 million to put on a retractable roof. And the first time in the history of the world, they put a retractable roof on that arena only because of the foresight of Edgar Kaufman. If you go back and look at the Park Martin was a professional for Davy Lawrence. He was such an incredibly imaginative man. Go back and look at the pictorial history of Pittsburgh, not only Stephen Laurent, but others, and see the pictures of these people. A.E. Braun was the president of a bank, became the chairman of the board of directors of Chatham College, that time called Pennsylvania College for Women. Mr. Falk sat with him on that board. Mr. Falk was the vice chairman of the University of Pittsburgh board, where Mr. Scaife was the chairman. And each time it was important to take on a community responsibility, these men supported each other in an unbelievable way. And all of these things took place in the Duquesne Club, where at that time Jews were not welcome as members, but we held meetings there, and it didn't really bother you because the food wasn't nearly as good as Concordia Club anyhow.
It never was. I was there one time, two times.
I've been there hundreds of times. The young presidents used to.
How'd you happen to like to go there?
Well, because it was a business responsibility. No, it wasn't. You didn't care about that. You didn't care the fact that they didn't. They didn't want you for members. It was you had a public meeting to go to,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't have to give a damn whether Mr. What's his name was the manager of the hotel. He didn't care whether he liked Jews or not. The fact was that that you were there to do community service, and you did it. And it was just a great, great time. I wish I could go over some.
Did you know a guy by the name of Dick or Dickie?
Oh, what a wonderful man, Dickie. Dickie lived across the street from me.
Dickie is
president of Dravot.
President of Dravot.
And he has children, and I took his children to school. I carpooled with his kids. What a wonderful guy.
Did he ever tell you a Jew joke?
No. No, he was a very sensitive man. He still lives. He's a wonderful man. He's on the board of directors, I think he's still on the board of directors of the Pittsburgh Foundation by appointment of the federal court. Very sensitive man. Just a wonderful man. And he was the protege of another wonderful man by the name of William Tecumseh Fitch. William Tecumseh Fitch owned the controlling interest in Dravot with his family. I happen to be the first Jew ever permitted to sit on the board of the Palmerville Rehabilitation Center. And Mr. Fitch was their biggest benefactor. Palmerville was started in 1912 by a bunch of women, single ladies, who thought that the women having children out of wedlock should have some special support. And so they had this place up there in Palmerville, and it still exists. It's a union hall. And William Tecumseh Fitch was such a wonderful man.
Palmerville, what's the name of that?
Palmerville Rehabilitation Center.
Oh, Rehabilitation Center.
Yeah.
Oh, that was started for...
1912, it started out for women having children out of wedlock. And then in 1933, it began to take an interest in other elements of health. And it was owned by the Society of Girls Schools. It was owned by the Association of Girls School Societies. In other words, all of the girls schools in the eastern part of the United States would meet once a year, and they founded it and funded this rehab center because they were girls that went on to Smith and Vassar, and they came out of some of the other prep schools, the girls' prep schools. And those were the people that came back to Pittsburgh, and they were the people that raised the money. The daughters of the really rich burgers. Anyhow, that Palmerville experience was so exciting. I had the pleasure of putting together the pension fund for them, chairman of the committee that did the pension. And I met some wonderful people that now are recognized. Of course, in those days, even back in 66 to 71, it was recognized as a wonderful institution. And it was a thrill to watch it work because they did such good work. And it became world renowned. Of course, now is a very important adjunct to the Health Society. I had an idea one time. It was across the street from the D.L. Clark Estate, and that was owned by a Jewish fellow named Chucky Morris. Charles Morris was a bachelor, and he paid $800,000 for the thing, and he sold off one piece for Palmerville. That got him the whole $800,000 back, and the whole estate of Charles Morris included the Medical Arts Building and a lot of buildings on Vaughan Boulevard, and all of his estate is left for Montefiore Hospital and the Jewish Home for the Aged. But I said to him many years ago, I went to visit him, I said, Chuck, you've got this house, it's got three or four, it's a magnificent place with a swimming pool, it's got three or four houses on it, why don't you let us put the Mug and Velvet over the front door, make this into a training center, combining geriatrics for the Home for the Aged, which you have a great interest in, and the Palmerville Rehab Center, which is across the street, and they could use this for housing. And I went to the University of Pittsburgh and asked them if they wouldn't consider circulating the third-year medical students through this facility, because you couldn't learn physical medicine except at Temple University or Denver, Colorado. There was no facility for training physiatrists except in those two cities, and we could become an important center. This is at a time when D.L. Watson was going downhill, and it was a time that Palmerville was really becoming preeminent. The tragedy in the times is that one of the governors permitted a private institution to come into Monroeville and cut up the market. The Armourville at one state took over Whiteman Manor in order to protect that system. I brought together a very interesting meeting of Rehabilitation Institute of Pittsburgh that had a wonderful director, and the BRC and St. Francis and Armourville. I brought those four institutions together for the purpose of seeing if we couldn't do two things. One, interrelate the facilities geographically so that people didn't have to travel and get other things going. And two, couldn't we create a corporation that could manufacture important prostheses for profit in order to create another corporation that would be a for-profit corporation and provide an ongoing service? Well, you won't believe this. We had a wonderful meeting. And then one of the suggestions was that I should go and take this idea to the area-wide human resources body that gave permission to build additional facilities. And at that time, Mr. Falk had a son, Sigo, who had this sinecure working for this Health Resources State of Pennsylvania institution. And so he came to one meeting and destroyed the concept right on the spot because he couldn't understand how this could be done without their help. And he was going to convene the next meeting. Well, he never convened the next meeting. And the idea never had a chance.
SIGO, S-I-G-O?
S-I-G-O. No, you never heard of him. He lives out in Thornburg. He lives like a shaggy But the point is that he's a nice guy, but he had no imagination.